settled. And the legislature did that in 1969 and 1970, passed the present Alaska Public Utilities Commission Act. Before that, it was a part-time commission. Passed the act that we have today, 4205, made it a full-time commission, and said, resolve this problem. And gave them the tools to do that, including the present 221, which we have today. And 221D says that where the commission finds that determines that two or more public utilities are competing to furnish identical service, then it can take measures to eliminate that competition. And clearly the thrust of the act that the legislature passed in 70 was to solve this problem and eliminate this fighting between utilities. The commission did that starting in 71 and resolved service areas and split up the Chugach and MLMP service areas. But in doing that, the act in 1970 re-regulated electric municipal utilities and required them to have a certificate, something that they hadn't been required to have before. All of a sudden, you had competing, overlapping certificates. And the court said, your certificate is not a exclusive certificate, but you have to remember the context they said that in. Not an exclusive certificate because for the first time we have competing, overlapping certificates, and so we're going to take away some people's, and in fact the commission did that, took away some of Chugach's certificate, and took away some of the municipalities, and set the service area boundaries so that they were exclusive. So that's just back to the cases that are being cited for that. On the question of whether the commission has jurisdiction to order competition in the electric utility industry or not, I don't think we need to argue it because this bill clearly gives them that authority. If they don't have it, and if they have it, then it just still gives them that authority. Only if they have it, they don't have it specifically, because I don't think you'll find in 4205 any place where the statute gives the commission the specific authority to put competition in place in the electric utility industry. This bill would give them that specific statutory authority. The final thing I want to talk about is the standard a moment, because the question was asked, what does clear and convincing mean versus preponderance of the evidence? And the commission, in some other areas, must find certain facts by the preponderance of the evidence. That standard basically is that it's probably true. It's more likely than not to be true. Or to say it another way, that's preponderance that I'm defining. To say it another way, if there's a chance that it is true, even the slightest bit greater than the chance that it's false, then you have preponderance of the evidence. So all you have to have is just a little more than 50% confidence. Just even if there's the slightest bit of a chance that's true over a chance that's false, then you've made the preponderance of the evidence statute. Now, clear and convincing, on the other hand, is highly probable that it's true. And it's not necessary that it be true. It's not necessary that it be true beyond a reasonable doubt. That's a much higher standard. That's a criminal standard. Just that it is more than probably true. And that's all clear and convincing is it's more than just probably true. And in this area, where if the commission were to grant competition that adversely affected the rates and services in the existing area, I think it's Eureka's position that they ought to be more than just the slightest bit convinced that it's true versus false, that will happen, that they won't adversely affect the rates. But by the way, that where I'm quoting from is the pattern jury instructions for the state of Alaska. In this case, I'm quoting out of a civil case on defamation, but defamation just because the standard in those, in that particular thing is, has both preponderance and clear and convincing, but it's a standard that's in the jury instructions throughout the, jury instructions. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Campbell. Is there, are there questions of Mr. Campbell? Mr. Campbell, in Alaska Statute 42.05311, there's a provision that the transmission facilities be shared if there's won't result in substantial injury to the owners or the detriment of service to customers of the owners. This was the nose under the tent, but there, this seems to give some authority to the commission, which the commission just stated that they believe they do have the authority. And you just said that it would be moot if we pass the bill, but what would happen if we don't pass the bill?
If you don't pass the bill, there is, you signed the statute for joint use and interconnection of facilities, it's called, and it applies to all electric, or all utilities, and does require them to interconnect with each other. What it does not necessarily do is require them to open up their whole systems and allow the sharing of customers or the serving of each other's customers. It's simply an interconnection statute. I think the difference, there's a significant difference between electric utilities and how they're set up in telephone utilities. And there's, I think you cannot take the experience with competition in the telephone industry and bring that over on a one-for-one basis to the electric industry. For instance, the economies of scale in the electric industry, there are economies of scale that are not there in the telephone industry. There are, you'll hear about stranded costs. There are stranded, very high stranded costs in the electric industry if you lose large loads and large customers that are not there in the telephone industry. They don't go over one-to-one. But there is that joint use if the bill is not passed. I don't think we're talking about, for instance, wholesale transmission. If the bill is not passed, presumably the commission still has the power to open up the transmission system and allow electric utilities to transmit on a wholesale basis between each other over the systems of another utility. Here, this bill is a retail bill.
Well, Mr. Campbell, in your opinion, as a, I take it you have experience in utility law, would there, the commission just indicated that they had adequate protection to prevent the cherry picking or creaming of customers? Is there a way that a statutory provision could be adopted to prevent that, that would still not be an impediment to a competitive situation?
Well, of course, we think House Bill 234 is just that. It's an anti-cherry picking, 235, I'm sorry. It's an anti-cherry picking bill, and it puts in the standard of clear and convincing, which does the commission have to be sure that, in fact, they aren't going to cause it, that kind of thing, kind of disastrous consequences before they order the competition. So we think it's just that.
Further questions, Ms. Campbell? Thank you very much, sir. Next, we'd like to go to John Handeland, Mayor of Nome in Anchorage, I believe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Handeland. I'm from Nome, PO Box 281. Our phone number is 443-NOME. I'm the mayor, and the city owns and operates a certificated electrical utility through its Nome Joint Utility System. The city of Nome and our utility board supports House Bill 235. Presently, we're in the process of evaluating system additions. We need to have a guarantee. I believe that the individual large load stable users on our system, who are, as Mr. Martin mentioned, cheaper to service in many cases, are not pulled from our system because we have high costs of infrastructure and huge investments by our communities that need to be amortized. We're certainly not opposed to competition, but it must be clear that the addition of another provider or providers will not adversely affect our consumers. And we believe that this legislation sets a standard that the public interest would be served by the enactment of this legislation, and we urge the committee to move the bill. Thank you.
Questions, Mr. Henlon? Representative Cuddy.
Yeah, what is the cost of NOME? I assume you do it by diesel?
That is correct.
You got a kilowatt hour cost for...
Our kilowatt hour cost is about 16 cents a kilowatt.
16. Thank you.
Further questions? For none, thank you very much, sir. Is there anybody else on the teleconference line that has not signed up with the monitor that wishes to testify? Anybody else that wishes to testify on the the teleconference line?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Yeah, this is Tim Cook on the Public Utilities Commission here in Anchorage.
Yes, sir, Mr. Cook.
I just wanted to make a few quick comments on the bill and on the commission in general. As you know, the commission hasn't taken a formal position on the bill, but I just wanted to kind of give a background to I think, where the commission philosophy is and where the commission is headed. As you know, there's recently been a change in the commission makeup here, and I think for the first time since the commission was formed, you've got a majority of commissioners who are very much in favor of competition. I think this bill is, in essence, a result of that change in philosophy, because as the commission pushes forward with competition, a great many entities, particularly the monopolies, have a certain fear. And I think the thrust of this bill, although it's couched as opening the door for competition, by raising the bar to this clear and convincing standard, it actually makes the job of the commission more difficult in introducing competition into these markets. Under our statutes, we have, we believe, and the Attorney General has indicated as such, that we have the ability to allow competition or to prevent competition, whichever is in the public interest of that particular community. And to do so, we look at a preponderance of the evidence, whether it's probably in the best interest of that community. If you raise the bar to the clear and convincing standard, it makes it much more difficult. We have to do a huge analysis, and the net effect is that it makes it almost impossible to allow new competition into an area. The other point that I wanted to make is that the standard of any harm to a utility is, I hate to use the word ludicrous, but it approaches that. We have been in a hearing where the federal officials have testified that if rates were raised 1 cent for one customer, that wouldn't be serving the federal purpose under the federal regulations. In essence, that's what this bill is doing, is if it raises the rate 1 cent to one customer, but lowers it 10 cents to the remaining customers, it's not in the federal purpose. It's a very convoluted concept, but what it does is it creates a situation where it's almost impossible to allow competition. And I think that I speak for the majority of the commissioners here when I say that this commission wants to promote competition, and that if that's where the legislature wants to go, this bill is not the way to do it.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Cook. That's interesting that you're giving your statements that the commission hasn't taken a position on the bill. I appreciate that. Representative Sanders.
Tim, this is Representative Sanders. Do you feel that this bill is appropriate for both the metropolitan areas and the rural areas in Alaska?
Commissioner Sanders,
commissioner.
I haven't given a great deal of thought into the rural versus metropolitan areas. I understand there's a great problem when you get into rural areas because of the stranded investments, et cetera. I guess my quick take on that is that the real problem with this bill is the standard. When you raise that standard to clear and convincing, it makes it almost impossible, whether it's either a rural or a metropolitan area, to meet that burden. And I guess that's my concern. I wish I could answer you more directly than that.
Well, that's fine. Thank you, sir.
Tim, is Mr. Lohr still there?
Yes, he is.
Yeah. And let me just get some housekeeping things out of the way, that we need to have the APUC prepare a paper on what they just outlining some of the basic definitions and procedures that would be a justification for your assertion that the commission has the ability to do this authority now. And then also some other background stuff too, like what a certificate of need and inconvenience is, and what rights they convey, and what responsibilities the certificate holders has, and what is the certificate holder's legal requirement to provide service to everybody. If you could give us kind of a background report on that, as well as the justifications for the assertion of existing authority. And I guess we can pursue copies of the case law, but nothing too voluminous, or I don't want to put a burden on your staff, and forward that to the committee, we'd be really appreciative of. And
we'd be happy to do that, Representative Roper. I guess two clarifying questions, if I might. One is, I've asserted that the commission has authority to undertake competition under existing statute, and the second one was that we can deal with anti-cherry-picking appropriately. Do you want both of those covered?
Yes, if you would, please, so that's clear that we need to establish a comfort zone on those things, I think. And just for everybody's information, I intend to send this to a subcommittee, but a subcommittee with life and spirit, not a dark, deep one. Because the reason I'm doing that is this is an extremely important issue to the people of the state, and I want to make sure that this committee does its job properly and gives a full hearing and has a full understanding about what it's doing. There's clearly some controversial points here that really need to be brought to the full light of day. And because we have a unique situation, I think, in this state with a very minimal amount of what we call our private sector type companies, but with the specter of those, like, those firms moving into the area, we need to enlighten ourselves, I think.
Mr. Chairman, are you seeking a position paper from the commission on the bill as well as part of that analysis?
Well, I'd actually like to get the backup that we requested first, and if you can give us further analysis on it, that's fine. I don't want to, slow the process down.
Okay.
We only have a little limited amount of time down here, and it would be my intention of trying to move the bill along the process this year if it's feasible, if the committee satisfies itself on the bill, but it probably might take some amendments. Who knows, so. I mean, that I'm open to it. I'm not implying that I want to move it one way or the other, just for everybody's understanding. I just want to make sure that we're comfortable with it. And also, Mr. Lohr, I was a little concerned about the fiscal note when I think you answered my question earlier about that, or did you? You believe you need to have that position filled as an engineer, range 21, when without any applications for competition, which you believe you have authority to grant now on your table, or are there any applications for certification on the agenda or request of your commission?
Mr. Chairman, there are no pending applications for competitive electric service that I'm aware of at this time.
So the fiscal notes in...
Except for under the old PURPA, the Public Utility Regulatory Policies Act, as the witness from Copper Valley mentioned, Mr. Wilkinson, there is a pending application there for avoided cost as a calculation and a qualifying facility, a coal-fired facility in Valdez. But the fiscal note assumes that by the fourth quarter of FY98, such proceedings would be active, and that's why the position is not scheduled to begin until then. That's why the lower amount for personal services during the FY98 reflects an assumption that that's when that engineering analyst would be needed.
Well, I know it's budget time anyway to plug a hole in a sinking ship. I can appreciate your concerns, Mr. Moore. Any questions of the commission members right here now? I'm going to ask Mr. Don Edwards, who is in the audience, if he would want to present his views on the competitive angle here, if you wouldn't mind, sir. And please identify your name and affiliation for the record, if you would. I appreciate your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. My name is Don Edwards. I'm general counsel with Chugach Electric in Anchorage. As we obviously are interested, otherwise we wouldn't have come down to attend this hearing. And what caught our attention, of course, was the HB 235, because it raises the issue of competition. And we don't want to speak against this bill so much as express our concern about competition in Anchorage, because we've really made no secret of the fact that Chugach has been favoring retail competition in Anchorage for quite some time now. So we don't want to speak to the areas outside of Anchorage. This may be an appropriate approach for areas outside of Anchorage, but as far as in Anchorage is concerned, we're confident that the circumstances are now ripe for retail competition, and we don't want to see anything that would raise the bar as this might to create an impediment to competition in Anchorage. With the chair's permission, I have a diagram of a electric system that I could hand out.
Go right ahead.
Anybody else who wants them to them? And the only purpose for giving you this is just to demonstrate that the proportions of the electric system that we think are open to competition and the portions that are not. You see in the upper left-hand corner the generation plant, that I would circle as open to competition, and then down on the bottom there's retail transactions, and that is an area which we think is ripe to be opened up to competition. The other areas, all the wires and boxes in between, are going to, we believe, remain regulated and monopoly facilities, and we're not looking at anything that might duplicate those facilities, as I believe Mr. Kempel referred to the past history where they had to break up a fight between Chugach and MLMP, where there were facilities running down both sides of the street. We're not interested in that kind of an outcome here.
Let me interject here. Sure. Just a question. Given the federal legislation about wholesale wheeling, I mean, is this unusual just because it's the state of Alaska? We do have wholesale wheeling now here in the state, do we not, or do we? Or?
The federal, there's a debate among lawyers about whether the federal legislation requires transmission access here. Chugach has always taken the position that its system is open and it's willing to provide transmission access to people who need to use it.
Because it was paid for in large part by the state of Alaska.
Some parts of it were. Parts of it were paid for by our ratepayers as well. So I don't think the transmission system is really the main issue here. Mostly what we're talking about, in order to you know, our concern is mainly with retail competition. There already is competition at the generation level. There's competition. We compete with MLMP for the Fairbanks load. We compete with them for Copper Valley. Seward right now competing. What we would like to do is to leave the way open for competition at the retail level. And so and I think the interesting point to make about retail transactions is that competition at the retail level also strengthens competition at the generation level, because under current circumstances, if you make a mistake in your acquiring power at the generation level, you can pass through the cost of that mistake to your customer at retail because they're captive customers. And so we think that there's benefits to opening up the retail level to competition, because it enhances competition at the generation level as well. What we're interested in, let me comment on say that I was out for some portion of the Public Utility Commission comments, but I think we agree with them. We believe that under existing law, the commission does have the ability to permit competition, and we believe that there's authority there as well for requiring access over distribution facilities. And I also agree that the PUC is there and available and empowered by existing law to deal with cherry-picking problems. The way the statute reads, and Mr. Kemple read it, is it assumes that competition can occur. It says if competition occurs and the commission finds that competition, the way it's happening, is harmful, the commission is empowered to step in and sort it out. Now, he's correct that the context of that legislation was with power lines running down both sides of the streets and some fairly wild and woolly competition. The circumstances now are different because we're not talking about that, but the authority for the commission to deal with problems like that, should they arise, is there. And let me just speak to the cherry picking question a little bit, because I think that's one person's cherry picking, I think, is another person's competition. It's sort of a shorthand way of talking about it. But I think it's useful to look at other industries that have gone through a process of becoming more competitive. And the natural gas industry may be one of the maybe a good example to look to. And except where utilities had their rates completely out of whack, there really have not been negative impacts of that. In Anchorage, it's interesting to note, in Anchorage for the last several years, there has been retail competition in natural gas. There's been cherry picking going on in Anchorage in the natural gas market. There are small companies that are going around and they're picking off large customers. And that, to my knowledge, has not negatively impacted retail gas customers in Anchorage. Telephone long distance, there's been heavy duty cherry picking going on in that business, and to my knowledge, the residential customers have done fine through that. So first question is, will cherry picking harm? And I think it's very seriously questionable whether or not it will. And again, I'm speaking about in Anchorage. I'm not presuming to know enough to talk about other areas. The other thing to think about, I think, is what do you do with you got to remember who is it that we should be trying to protect here? And what I think we want to do is think about the consumers and all sizes of consumers, from large to small. We shouldn't be worried about whether or not an electric utility loses a customer so much as what impact that might have on customers. And so when you talk about small consumers and being interested in making sure that you protect the residential consumer, what you need to be concerned about and make sure is that the competition occurs and is open at all levels. Because just to give you an example, if Chugach were to lose a load to MLMP after competition, and we were to try to simply take other costs and jam them through to our retail customers. If there was no competition allowed at the retail residential level, then we might be able to get away with that. But if there's competition at that level, then we can't do that, because if we do, we'll lose those customers because our price will go too high. And so it's important to, you know, the marketplace can solve those problems if you allow it to run. And so, and another, I think, point to note about being concerned about residential customers is that is the role of load aggregation. For example, in the airline industry, you have companies that are tour companies, tour package tour companies, and the airlines give those tour companies some very good deals on tickets. And what those tour companies do is they aggregate together a group of customers, and they go and they bargain directly with the seller. I think you can expect to see that in the retail residential market in the electric industry. You will see people go out and gather up a group of customers and then come negotiate with the electric providers, the power providers. And that's a way in which residential customers will be packaged themselves as cherries ripe for the plucking, and be able to do just fine after retail competition occurs. So it was not our intention to come provide testimony, but what we think makes sense for Anchorage is an access now, litigate later kind of approach, and we'd like to suggest that as a possibility. It may be beneficial to arrange a situation where access is required immediately, and you develop a access charge immediately based upon the each utility's most recent filing with the commission, and that would allow competition to start immediately and quickly without a high hurdle to get over. Because in Anchorage, we know we've got two capable, qualified electric utilities that can and presumably, in our view, should be open to competitive pressures, because we think it'll result in benefits to the customers.
Thank you, Mr. Edwards. There are some questions. Representative Ryan?
Well, I am familiar with some of what you're talking about with tour companies, but they do something. They buy large blocks of hotel rooms for periods of time, and they buy large blocks of airline tickets, and then, of course, if they can't fill them, they have to discount them and either take the loss or try to recover. They do get substantial discounts by doing this. How would this, what have you, you must have penciled something in. If a competition were to come into Anchorage with municipal light and power, what kind of benefits could the consumer see? How many cents a kW? Do you have any idea on?
I wouldn't be able to give you that kind of a judgment today, and part of the reason is because it would depend on how competition got started, whether it got started at the large customer level or on a mass market level. Different customers would have different, let me just say, that other than residential customers actually are charged on the basis, at least the way we currently make rates, in traditional rate making, is you charge customers two different prices, one for the amount of kilowatt hours they use, the number of, the energy they use, and another for the demand they place on the system. And that has the point of that is to try to compensate for and provide price signals that tell the customer that it's costly to place demand on the system. And so because of that way of charging customers, without looking at each individual customer other than residential and comparing it to their load patterns, you can't tell what their rate would be, and you can't, so it's difficult to make broad pronouncements like that are really very defensible. Obviously, we think that there are savings to be given to customers, otherwise we wouldn't be interested in. And I guess the other incentive is we feel very strongly at Chugach that competition will happen, that you can delay it for a period of time But eventually, it's happening all over the world in the electric industry, and it's happening in the lower 48. People have figured out that there's those two pieces of the system, generation and retail, that are not natural monopolies, that don't have to be rate regulated anymore necessarily, and certainly can be open to competition. And we think that we need to get ready for that day, and the way we want to get ready for it, we think it's best to get ready for it, is to start doing it.
Okay, one further question, Mr. Chairman.
Over there, right.
You would have to do some kind of a market survey to present a rate change to APUC. Second, the question I have is the usual pattern of APUC of taking forever and a day to get anything done and charging a bunch of money for that service. How does this impact your time value of money and your opportunity to be competitive on the market when you've got this 6 month, a year delay because people are sitting around, whatever they do down there, I don't know.
Well, I'm going to be careful not to be critical of the agency that regulates us. But let me just put it this way. It definitely does figure in your business decisions, in Chugach's business decisions, about whether to compete for a load. It matters how much time, money, and effort we think will need to be expended in order to get regulatory approval. And that's one of the reasons why we'd rather not have this bill, this HB 235, apply to Chugach and MLMP in Anchorage, because we don't want to have the ability to get into competition contingent upon this kind of a process that we would have to go through in front of the commission in order to get regulatory approval to do it. We like it better the way it is. We'd rather that nothing be done just from Anchorage. And again, I want to be very clear, I'm not talking about the rest of the state. I think things are different in Anchorage, as people have pointed out. The economies of scale are there where they may not be in other communities. And so what may make very good sense for the reasons that other people have testified to here may not necessarily, those same arguments may not necessarily hold, and we don't believe they hold in Anchorage. So I'm not sure I answered your question, but the point is, yes, the cost of regulatory approval does matter in making the decision of whether to compete for a load and how you go about pricing your product or your service. But one option would be, at least for the initial competition, one option would be that you could offer, you wouldn't have to offer everything on the basis of new rates. You might be able to offer some services on the basis of existing tariff rates.
Representative Cowdery.
Yes, off the top of the head, what's the rates we pay in Anchorage retail rates, you know?
Around 9.5% for residential, somewhat less for commercial loads, but again, because of the two components of the price variation.
And what areas does do you serve? You serve, how far south do you go?
We go to Cooper Landing. Sure, Girdwood,
Portage,
Portage, yes,
Alyeska,
mm-hmm.
And Whittier.
Yes, we serve Whittier.
And the rates change in them various.
No, postage stamp rates throughout the Chugach retail service area.
What area you talk about? What area would be attractive to CEA to pursue for maybe doing some wheeling thing?
Well, we think that for our purposes, the Chugach existing retail service territory and the MLMP existing retail service territory would be appropriate for, if you want to think of it as an experiment, we take it more seriously than that, but if you want to think of it as an experiment, you could. We think that those territories are sufficient to allow us to compete.
Is your energy cost about the same?
Our
Your generation costs?
They're very comparable. We of course don't know what their generation costs are, and if you're talking about prices, our prices are similar. In fact, I saw a publication from NLMP that showed their prices lower on a number of customer classes than ours. So,
I'm talking about production costs.
Production costs. I don't know what their production costs are.
The chair would suggest that those production costs may be changing in the next few years, given the acquisition of a large amount of fuel source by the NLMP, the purchase of a portion of the Beluga gas field. Other questions, Mr. Edwards? Mr. Edwards, would a form of legislation that allowed the people outside the Anchorage area maintain their relative exclusivity and opening up for, let's say, even a pilot program period, if you will? I don't know. A pilot program really doesn't work because when you have sunk costs and huge investments, you can't really turn on a dime. But an area that would open up the Anchorage municipality for more competitive review by the commission would be something that you think your association would be comfortable with?
I'd of course have to go, talk to my board and so forth. But it strikes me as a reasonable proposition, and similar to what, So that's similar to what we've been thinking, because we don't want to presume to say what is appropriate for places outside of where we operate. We operate in Anchorage. We know Anchorage. We think it's appropriate for Anchorage.
Well, for the record, we do have a letter in our files today from MLMP in Anchorage of supporting the bill before us. So, therefore, I would take it. I think I would be correct in saying that they would oppose your view in that basis.
That doesn't surprise me.
Right. Okay, that's good. You just confirm. Good. Right. As far as the credibility of my statement, that's like that. But no, I think that's. A fair enough statement. I did want to put that on the record. So, is there further questions, Mr. Edwards? Thank you. I've got a question for Mr. Gould now, and maybe we can get out of here shortly.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Gould, did you? I would just. I just asked Mr. Edwards a question. I'll repeat that same. If we could draft some type of legislation that basically left the status quo, but gave you a little further comfort and allowed the Anchorage area to fight it out amongst themselves, do you think that would satisfy most of your membership?
Mm.
Or have you had that kind of conversation?
Mr. Chairman, I'd have to say that we haven't had that kind of conversation, given the fact that the three members in the Anchorage area, that is MEA out in the Eagle River area, MLNP and Chugach, are all members of my service organization. I suspect that it would have some sort of fracturing effect on the organization itself. But what's really important is what is best for the consumers. We have at least two of those entities have indicated that they would not like to see competition at the retail level, and Chugach, I have to say, in all fairness to their position, and I understand the awkward position that they're in, they would like to see some sort of retail wheeling. It was mentioned that some sort of competition will take place in the future no matter what. Dow Jones reporter indicates that sometime in the future, if deregulation goes through, that we will probably see, rather than a preponderance of utilities throughout the United States, probably eight large mega corporations throughout the United States. I guess I would presume that one of those would be up here in Alaska if what Mr. Edwards says is true. That is, we would have some sort of competition. The problem that I have is if we bring in investor-owned utilities to the state of Alaska, because it will not be an REA co-op, where it will not be a municipal entity where all the benefits go straight back to the consumers, Instead, we're going to have an entity that has to pay taxes, which I'm not necessarily against. In this day and age, it certainly has to be considered. They're going to have to charge a 15% rate on return. They're going to have dividend distributions, probably to somebody in the lower 48. They're going to have management that I can tell you has a salary structure probably 10 times greater than the salary structure that we have in the state of Alaska right now. We're going to have entities that have to get their financing from other than where our present utilities do, and that is generally through some sort of tax-exempt entity or state or federal entity that gives favorable interest rates. And then finally, and this is maybe a negative in your own way of thinking, but because we are all owned by the people, any subsidy that goes to our utilities as a result of a state appropriation or federal appropriation goes straight back to them. Not the case with an investor-owned utility. So I find it hard to believe that an investor-owned utility that comes up to the state of Alaska can truly, without predatory pricing, provide power for the long term cheaper than what the existing utility structure can, which really means that what you're going to see is some early on predatory pricing until they gain the, and I'll call it stranglehold, and then in the future you will see the cost of electricity going up. That's what I see with deregulation in the state of Alaska.
Representative Ryan.
One question, sir. This is, you know, the whole state's about 600,000 people.
Correct.
That's not a small suburb to a city in the lower 48. And the infrastructure costs and everything else is stuff spread out over 800 and some miles. I don't really see where an industrial-owned company could come up here and be profitable.
Well, I seriously question that as well, and frankly, they don't have a technology better than what Chugach already has. I mean, we are providing state-of-the-art power generation. I don't see it happening either. But that's not to say that somebody couldn't come in and say, okay, out in Quetzaluck, we're going to pick off the local school and maybe a Northern Commercial and leave everybody else stranded. They could do that, and that's the problem. And the same thing could happen in the rail belt as well.
For the question, Mr. Chairman. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Yule. And this time we will hold open the public hearing on this because it's my intention to appoint a subcommittee and review this. Matter of fact, I would ask that you perhaps ask your three members about the question I brought up here to at least be able to respond to the subcommittee's deliberations. And that being the case, I'd like to appoint Representative Jerry Sanders as the chairman of the subcommittee, Representative Kadri and Representative Bryce to sit on the subcommittee, and I would be happy to participate. And their charge would be to look at this, receive the information that we requested from the APUC in terms of background, review the case law on this, and then communicate with Mr. Gould here, and also Mr. Edwards from CEA, and Mr. Starr from the MLMP particularly. And also, I would suggest the subcommittee that they look at the revisit Mr. Wilkinson up in Glen Allen as far as the Copper Valley situation. He mentioned three competitive to do the so-called cherry picking and to see what that might be a good area to kind of look at, focus on that to see what some of those problems are. Because it seems to me that we could perhaps solve some of the comfort zone of some of the folks, but not all. And then we also should look at whatever legislative mandate there is in existing statutes. And that would come from the memorandum from the APUC to see where we are on that. So with that, this committee stands adjourned at 5:48. Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you very much.